PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is Rodney Shakespeare. Get ready for a riveting hour of discussion. We'll cover Ukraine. We'll cover other issues. We'll cover everything that's on Rodney's mind. I want to stress, did it before. I'm doing it when people involved in my book project come on air. Rodney is an extremely important contributor to my new edited and contributed to book on Ukraine that is due out on the 1st of June. It's called Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. Rodney, this morning I had a full-hour interview on the book on an Arizona-based radio station hosted by a web editor who follows my writing, who supports it. It was a marvelous interview. He let me go through all the contributors on the book. He let me explain who they are very briefly. And most important, he let me list and discuss a little bit the topics that are discussed in the book to give listeners an idea of the vital stuff that this book includes, and that each chapter really is a standalone explanation of a key topic on what I call the most important geopolitical issue of our time. I don't think there's any question about it. Very briefly, and I'll let you jump in, I discovered this in the last 30, 45 minutes or so. It's posted on the RT International website, going back to the May 2nd Odessa massacre, which my Clarity Press editor asked me 24 hours before the book's window closed. Maybe she held it to get this in. She asked me to write specially addressing the massacre, and I did. And I put it in an enlarged introduction, and she took it out of the introduction and made it a separate chapter. She simply titled The Odessa Massacre, which is exactly what I would have titled it. Indeed, it was. The original report said 48 people were killed. The facts are that around 300 were killed, and they didn't die from fire. They were shot at point-blank range. I mean, this is accurate stuff. Eyewitnesses confirmed this. They were strangled to death. They were beaten to death. They were thrown out of windows. They didn't jump. Really ugly stuff. And the new information is an oligarch appointed by Kiev to be the governor in that region. Oh, it's a region with a very long name. I think it includes Odessa. I've got it written down. I have to study the word to be sure I pronounce it right. But it's basically a region that's encompassing that area. A guy named Kolomoisky, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, he enlisted these neo-Nazi right sector thugs to do what they did. And then he claimed, and I've got a quote from him that came out on a tape and it's gone viral. I don't see a link on RT International's website. I'm going to look and see if I can find a link. If I can find a link, I'll include it in my article. But I'm quoting what RT said. He said that he really only enlisted them to beat them up enough to send them to the hospital.
Well, Steve, I think you'll find that that particular newly appointed governor is a millionaire or a billionaire.
Oh, he is.
And that he was appointed to collect his own thugs and go and do the beating up and the killing.
Absolutely. RT, Ruddy, called him an oligarch and a tycoon.
That's right. Now, on the book, which I've read, it's my startling book because, you see, it came about just by the people doing it from sort of their own feeling for the aspect of the thing. And the whole book hangs together in a wonderful way, and it has all these different aspects. And so Flashpoint in Ukraine is a most wonderful book, and you're on top of the subject. And talking of your writing in particular, not just what the book is about, I saw an article which I've never seen it in the same form before, and it's by you, and it's got 86 facts. I know it's 86 because I can count to 86, and it took me a long time going down. write that particular article. But what a wonderful stylistic pinning of the.
Oh, I know the one you mean. An article where I quote what a liar says, like the New York Times, and then
that's
I go
right.
I go right down and I say fact, and quickly one sentence fact. Fact.
Well, yes,
sentence.
It's not one sentence. It's half a line each time.
Very
I've
brief.
Never seen it done like that. I mean, occasionally you've just gone over. You're looking about 5 words a time, or maybe 7 words.
Yes.
And here's one at about 15. Extraordinary punchy stuff. Never seen it laid out. The only time I've ever seen anyone get to about 80 or 90 facts is in one article I remember on 9/11. When there are 90 extraordinary facts, any one of which, of course, completely overthrows the mainstream explanation. But anyway, you've done a very good job on the subject, and I do congratulate you, and I congratulate you on that book. And as for that last piece of information...
Oh, I thank you very much, Rodney. You may be referring to my brand-new article that I titled New York Times War on Truth.
Yes. New York Times, War on Truth is the one, but it's largely about the one aspect of it, which is the lies about Putin and about Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's on my blog site. It's on Global Research. And indeed, I think those punchy, hot-hitting lines really just whacked the New York Times the way I wanted to.
Well,
I hope those people read it.
Your style is always punchy because you understand newspaper layout. And what that really should be is that the paragraphs should never be more than about 2 sentences, and they should be short. And this then makes for the eye to go over very well. Well, you've done that very well, and you always do that well. But then, excel yourself, and you then go into what are one line. Oh, even half-line facts. Quite extraordinary.
Well, I don't want to take credit for what happened and was explained by the New York Times today. The fact that they fired its editor, Jill Abramson. Oh, I don't think I had anything to do with that. But, you know, beating up on the New York Times means beating up on her. Anyway, she's been replaced and a new guy is in. Oh, I will go after him hammer and tong, I guarantee.
Maybe it was possibly about money, and that she as a woman found out she was being paid less. But of course there may well have been some more behind it as this. She may have been trying to be independent or something.
Well,
anyway,
if that's the case, I'll invite her on this program.
Get her
and
on.
Let her defend
get her
herself.
Okay, now, can I go now to Saudi Arabia? Because
it's
a very interesting development there, Steve. Now, Saudi Arabia, a real scummy place. It's not a country. It's the personal fiefdom of a very, very nasty family who came to power by violence and who maintain their regime in the most cruel, not autocratic, but totalitarian and vicious way. And to take an example, a blogger, somebody like you who just writes on a website on the internet, he has been given 10 years imprisonment, a substantial fine, and 1,000 lashes. Mm. And I don't want to spoil anybody's dinner, but the point about lashes is that can only be given in relatively short numbers because any more would kill the person. So they are given, and then, say, at 40 or 50 maximum, and then they are allowed to recover. That's just about, and then it's done again. And think what the meaning of 1,000, therefore, is. He's probably into 20 separate lashings a time. This is Saudi Arabia for you. And all the man's done is, of course, he's basically wants to just some democratic rights in the country. Now, this country, Saudi Arabia, is, of course, the inspiration and the practical fount of all the head-chopping, gas-choking, throat-slitting, garrotting of young girls, which is now going on right the way throughout the Middle East. To be fair, the Americans have helped it along, and Israel. There is an axis of evil. It's the USA, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. But all the horrors right the way across, which are, I'm afraid to say, essentially Sunni, and they're usually Sunni, directed at Shia for certain, but then, of course, at Christians, and to be fair, also at Jews. But the Takfiri mentality, which says that we are right to the extent that we can kill everybody else, anybody else who is different from us, that includes Muslims, as well as all anybody other faith, etc., that comes from the sheer arrogance of the Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia is, of course, totally anti-democratic, and I like to observe that if it's anti-democratic, it gets supported by the USA and the UK. I mean, over the last, since 1945, the USA has been involved in attempts and successful overthrows of about 50 governments. It's bombed 30 civilian populations. And if any government is democratic, you can be sure the USA will try to overthrow it. They therefore have not attempted to overthrow Saudi Arabia. The USA likes all the autocratic and vicious regimes. And between them, then, these this axis of evil, helped by the UK, was developing this Takfiri Jabhat al-Nusra rebellion in Syria. But it is now going wrong. And there's the agreement in Homs, which was negotiated by Russia and Iran. What a mistake to leave Iran out the original negotiations. The one country which can do something about and have some effect on the Syrian government is Iran. But they got on with it, and they negotiated, I'm not sure on the precise terms, but effectively the exit and the release, the relief of Homs. And this looks like as though it's going to start the snowball rolling for the eventual clearing out of all the opposition and the rebels, who are the Takfiri, who are fighting amongst themselves and killing literally anybody that they can kill. As a result of this, you are starting to see a sea change. I think the sea change started last August, when the result of programs like Progressive Radio News Hour, Press TV and Russia, the word got out about what the truth was in Syria, and namely that the gas was not done by the Assad government. They wouldn't be such idiots. It was in fact done with gas supplied by Saudi Arabia into the hands of the rebels with the intention of blaming the government, and the intelligence agencies found out. The word got out via this program and others, and that went onto Facebook and Twitter, and from there there was a great massive pressure on the MPs, members of parliament, in the UK. They said no attack on Syria, and that stopped the USA. Now, that was then a sea change, and the USA, frustrated by having mucked up Libya, of course, and everybody knows it has, and failing to get its war in Syria, has now ended up, of course, on trying to make a war in Ukraine. But Saudi Arabia, committed to the overthrow of Assad with the Americans, is suddenly having to recognize that it has failed. And the result is astonishing. Only 6 or 8 months ago, we were being regaled by WikiLeaks and others explaining and releasing the emails where Saudi Arabia was saying, attack Iran, because you see, all the ones who are attacked are the Shia. And Iran has attacked nobody in nobody knows how many hundred years. All the attacking is done by America and its allies. But now what happens is Saudi Arabia saying to America, attack, 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 as also the Israelis. Saudi Arabia has suddenly issued an invitation to Iran and saying, oh, look, why don't we get together and have a little chat? And the purpose of this little chat, of course, is to ensure that the stability of the Persian Gulf. So what you've got is Saudi Arabia in hands of the USA and Israel and the UAE and all the autocratic regimes in saying smash Iran, and the same as the Israelis. And now it's suddenly turned round and said, oh, well, we really ought to talk to them. And in fact, we are going to have a negotiate with them. And the Shia Arab Garand, the extraordinary thing about this, Steve, is that one moment they're going to try to utterly destroy, and now they're turning around and saying, oh, let's hold hands together. What has happened? Well, of course, it gets down in the first place to defeat in Syria. And I rather suspect, Steve, it also gets down to what would be the coming defeat of the West in Ukraine.
Oh, I believe it, Rodney. I really believe it. I mean, America lost the Afghan war. Libya and Iraq are out of control, cauldrons of violence. America can do nothing about what's going on there. You know, watch the two countries they destroyed literally continue violence every day. And the so-called governments, that stooge governments put in as proxies, they have no control at all over the stuff that's going on. Obama's war in Syria, another stunning defeat for Obama, Syrian military, just routing these foreign invaders that Washington enlisted in cooperation with Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and other related states. Another defeat. And now the Ukraine situation. You've got the courageous resistance in the East. And I think they're inspiring more Ukrainians to join them all the time. And I'm just waiting for the Western Ukrainians to realize how badly they've been had, that they're being governed by fascists, that they have no legitimacy, that the election's coming up on May 25th will be an utter sham, that the IMF diktats being imposed will impoverish them more than already. It's literally wrecking the country. It's handing it over to Western corporate predators. When they fully realize the impact of how they've been betrayed so badly, I just can't imagine that resistance will not erupt. And if it does erupt, I think it'll spread. And I think the whole Ukrainian enterprise will simply come apart, and Obama will have another defeat. My God.
I'm certain that is right. The economic situation is so bad, and they've now got lost Russian support and don't seem to be capable of any genuine support. All they're doing is putting IMF conditionalities in, which will smash the country and put it down to getting it sold off. They're going to do a Cyprus on it. When the Western Iranians wake up, what are they going to do, Steve? All they'll be able to do is to plead with Russia to come in and take them over. Steve, the situation is dangerous because you see at the moment, puffed up with arrogance and believing that they've got the American neocons behind them, as they have at this moment, the West Kiev government is going to attack in East Ukraine. And though Russia is playing a very subtle hand, and frankly is pulling back and keeping out and saying the solution is federalism, the realities are that there's going to be, and you've just mentioned the Odessa business, right? And you're getting the truth out on that. But there are these attacks are going on, and they're going to go on increasing scale. And I don't think Russia will have any option except to intervene in the East. But it holds the cards. I don't think the West would be able to touch it militarily in that particular area. And secondly, Russia holds the cards as regards the global financial system. And everybody will soon be making more and more agreements. I was just today on Russia Today on Crosstalk, and that there the subject was, are we moving to a multipolar world? Well, what could you say? The answer was, of course you are. And, you know, this full spectrum dominance of America in the air, in space, in the land, in politics and economics is such a preposterous, arrogant idea, and everybody has had enough. Steve, the USA smashed, let me look, Iran in 1953, democracy, 1963 in the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, all the threes, 1973, that would have been Chile. It is now exposed as the most anti-democratic force throughout the world. It has soldiers in 120, or secret soldiers in 124 countries. That's two-thirds of the countries. It is a power which is ripe to fall, and it thinks it's got something to offer Ukraine. And we know that it already owns agricultural enterprises. We know that Joe Biden's son is going, you know, that's typical of what's going on. They want to own Ukraine, own that rich black land, agricultural land, take it over and rip it off in exactly the same way as the intention was Iraq. As I always say, read the 100 Bremer orders and you can forget democracy in any form whatsoever. A complete rip-off. And that's what they're up to in Western Ukraine and poor old Western Ukraine. Now, see if I can come back to Saudi Arabia. Because, you see, it tells you something. It tells you that the defeat in Syria is going to be complete. it will be complete when they have an election, and they're going to probably almost certainly re-elect Assad with an absolutely huge majority. Huge majorities, well, of course, you have a huge majority, like with Hamas, and the USA rejects it. If you want 96% in, say, Crimea, the USA rejects it. And however you look at it, there's going to be a huge majority for Assad in Syria because they've had it. And as always, the USA reject it. But Saudi Arabia, they are bankrupt. Who wants the tax? They have created this monster, the Takfiri monster, which of course is vowing to destroy Saudi Arabia. Yes, they're vowing to destroy Israel. When are the Israelis? They created this Frankenstein monster thinking they could control it, but it will, in fact, if it wins in Syria, it will go straight at Israel, and it's going to go straight back at Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis are now panicking. They are now putting out an overture to their, not their traditional enemies, but their hated enemies, the one thing they fear above anything else. Because, Steve, Iran is the most democratic of nations. You have to be in the revolutionary celebrations. Just like the election of Rouhani, which is 51%, from a very high turnout. Oh, but it's indeed in the revolutionary demonstrations that you feel the fervor of the support and loyalty to the country. They fight amongst themselves, but they come together in the support of their revolution and Iran. Contrast that with a country, a totalitarian regime, ruled by sexual perverts. We know they're sexual perverts because they enjoy whipping women. That's what their lives are about. And they enjoy cutting off the heads of innocent Indonesian maids. They do that purely to terrify the population. You cannot think, I'm not saying Iran is perfect in all respects, but it is democratic. And you contrast that with Saudi Arabia, and yet Saudi Arabia is the first, not to blink, but it's actually putting its hand out. So what's going on? Answer, it has to be they recognize a huge defeat, like Bahrain, a client of the USA and the UK. Bahrain has already put a hand out to Russia. It did this in the form of an agreement between the Bahraini Sovereign Wealth Fund and the Russian one. They are all spotting something is beginning to crack open in the Middle East. And when it does crack open, Steve, it will crack open very, very suddenly and very violently. And they're trying to protect themselves, I ask you, by cozying up to Iran. If I was Iran, I'd be absolutely embarrassed. I would say, I don't know what to do. Your behavior has been so extraordinary, I can't even believe that you're attempting to say, let's join together in our common interest. But there you are, Steve. That, for me, is one of the most significant things, is Saudi Arabia putting their hands out, saying, we will talk to them in the hope that if any differences, they will be settled to the satisfaction of both parties. Our hope is that Iran becomes part of the effort to make the region as safe as possible. The ones who are the cause of all the... In Iraq, there's about 50 bombings a day. Most of them are not reported. And who's behind it? It's the Takfiri and it's the Saudis all the time. And these people are daring to talk about making the region as safe as possible. There is no terrorism associated with Iran. It is all Saudi and Wahhabist and Takfiri. And yet the Americans presume, I don't know what the Americans are going to say. But it's amazing stuff, Steve, that the Saudis could go crawling on virtually on the ground to Iran.
Ronnie, I'll have a new article tomorrow going out that updates what's happening in Vienna right now, the latest round of Iranian nuclear talks with the so-called P5 plus one countries, the five permanent members of the Security Council plus Germany and Iran. And Iran has negotiated so responsibly. I have very grave doubts that we really will get a responsible final resolution. Yet at the same time, Iran is so open in what they're doing. They've done it in all of the rounds, previous rounds of nuclear talks they've been engaged in for a decade. And I mentioned in this article that since 1984, Washington irresponsibly has designated Iran a state sponsor of terrorism, where Washington, of course, is the state sponsor of terrorism. The Saudis, the Israelis, lots of other U.S. allies, and Iran scrupulously has nothing whatsoever to do with terrorists. terrorism, and yet it gets wrongfully blamed over and over again for 30 years. For 30 years, Rodney, a disgusting situation. Wouldn't it be wonderful justice if all of these criminal enterprises, including America, come a cropper in that region and Iran emerges as the number one responsible country in the region, the strongest, the most resilient, the most respected? Wouldn't that be a wonderful ending to this story?
It would indeed. And a quick one on Michelle Obama. She's saying, let's rescue our girls, and that's somewhere between 200 and 300 kidnapped girls.
In Nigeria.
In Nigeria. And at the same time, my calculation is that her husband and predecessors have killed, not kidnapped, somewhere around 100,000 girls. I'm not talking people, I'm talking of girls, in the last 2 decades. So yes, it would be wonderful, and maybe things are moving. And a quick one, please, going back to Ukraine. A friend of mine pointed out that Arsene Lee Yatsenyuk, who
yes.
is the Ukrainian prime minister, has a foundation. And if you go to the foundation's website, you will see the logos of the foundation's partners. And amongst them, you've got NATO. You're going to have to let me get through this, Steve, without laughing. The National Endowment for Democracy, the USA State Department, Chatham House, and for your listeners who are not UK listeners, Chatham House is the sort of, it's the sort of spy, sort of secret foreign office spy networks. You've probably heard of Chatham House rules,
yes,
where they
yes,
have discussion,
yeah.
No one is allowed to talk. And it's basically a lot of neocons in the UK. And there's even the German Marshall Fund, which is a sort of, you can't make this up. But anyway, it gets back to your point. That's Ukraine there. Now, Steve, we've got many other things to talk about. I don't know how we're running on time, but I want to go to the Europarliament elections because they're coming up in this country, certainly next week, Thursday.
I have to follow that, so I'm very eager to hear what you have to say about that. We have the better part of 30 minutes, roughly about 30 minutes left, so we've got plenty of time to talk about other topics.
Okay, well, I want to have a crack on the European Parliament elections, and then I want to move on to a conference which I'm going to in Iran, actually. Anyway, the European Parliament elections. One can look at it from a very broad way, or one can look at it from the point of view of the United Kingdom. But I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that both aspects are virtually now the same. Lying behind the situation in Europe is a collapse of employment. Overall, they say it's about 12 to 13% for overall of Europe, they say. But then, of course, it's double that for young people. But when you then look at particular countries, you get, say, 52% unemployed in Spain and up to 70% in parts of Spain. And those who are employed have only part-time contracts and temporary contracts. Now, that collapse is going on right the way across the border, country after country after country. And as a result, you're finding that in Italy, there's the five-star movement, and they're going to do extremely well. They may well come top in the Europarliament elections. Cyprus, Greece, France, Holland, and the UK. Now, on the UK, you can expect that the UK Independence Party is probably going to come top. Does the UK Independence Party have an economic policy? No, it does not. It doesn't have a solution. But the point is, that is not the point. The point is a huge, great protest right the way across Europe. People say it's a sort of right-wing thing. Well, right-wing, you know, the economics is right-wing. Does it have some nasty overtones in some countries? Yes, it does. But that's nasty overtones and worse always come into play when you get a collapse of an economic structure. So it's going to be big. It's going to be, for my money, it's going to be a political, I think I better call it a political upset. With a revolution, you you replace one regime with another. But this is essentially so negative, I don't think that they've got any sort of clear way of their going forward. But it is going to happen, and there'll be some remarkable headlines you're coming across the Atlantic to you, and lots of people saying, oh, well, it's only a temporary thing, and they'll all go back, etc. But this idea that it's only a temporary thing, of course, is based upon the assumption that the European political elite know what they're doing, and they do not. And the situation is undoubtedly getting worse, and they've had 5 years now to start to get the thing right, and it is still going, well, 6 years, it's 5 or 6 years, and it is getting worse. The debt's building up, and the unemployment is increasing. And all the time they give you, they say there's a green shoot here and a green shoot there. It's all lies, it's getting worse. Wait for the political earthquake, Steve. On May the 22nd in the UK, whether it's the same in the other countries, I'm not sure. But anyway, at the end of this month, the Euro Parliament elections. Okay?
Well, now, again, yep. That is one issue I have not been following, so I appreciate your supplying listeners and me with information on what's upcoming, Rodney.
Well, they've just got to watch it and see it, you know, go underneath their eyes. But do remember, it is a plague on all your houses type of vote, and that those who are being voted for are people who do not necessarily have a policy. If you look at in the five-star movement in Italy, it starts as a plague on all your houses. And a rejection of all politics. There are now some politics starting to come through. They're starting to reject the grip of the global financiers and wanting to use the state money supply, which they can use either for government projects or they can use it via the money sector. They can actually do that. And there are some signs of new thinking. But in the first place, I think you have to look at it as a political protest whilst they work it out. But once you start to say the whole thing is wrong, then you really do have to come up with what is right. So if you pull the UK out of Europe, for what? To have to hand the thing over to what would be a more extreme global market, unfree finance capitalist solution than what we've got at the moment. So the thing is shifting to a sort of situation where people at some stage are going to have to think and find that new policy. Though whether that will be too late, because you see, once you get these political revolutions and you get the subsequent social revolutions, then governments start to move towards violent political repression. Steve, if I could go across now to my visit to Iran. And the reason why, and this may seem a little bit strange for your listeners, that this conference has been organized, and it starts from a supposition that the Prophet did in fact give solutions to the whole of life. But then if you read someone like Imam Khomeini, he was quite clear that the meaning of the solutions was political independence, cultural independence, religious independence, and this and that. But he did not. He said there is no clear solution to the what matters most of all, which is in fact the economics. And so you've got this conference, which typically with Iran starts by saying you must trace everything from the Prophet. But then as soon as you do that and you show willingness to try and investigate and to look the subject up, then the Iranians are become remarkably modern people. They then just say, well, as long as you attempt to show what is there, and then maybe if you fail, but the effort suffices, and then after that, they will then talk to you in very modern terms. And this conference, then, is going to be, certainly going to have major papers with this great idea of, is there something new that can be found in economics for the whole world? Of course, Iran is not a place where necessarily it's going to be where all justice will come and everything will be right. But that they are trying to find new paradigm thinking on a big way is perhaps the major purpose of this conference. And with any luck, I'll get about 3 or 4 days afterwards going around a few universities and rubbing in the message. So Iran is surprisingly flexible as regards new thinking. The trouble with the USA and UK and France and all the other political structures, they think that in a fundamental way they are right. There are just a few problems, and they don't actually conceive that they could be wrong. With Iran, viewing the economics, it basically starts the position that the whole thing is wrong and that we ought to try at least to go forward and find something which is right.
Oh, absolutely right. I must say that I participated with you in an earlier conference. You were in Tehran, and I did it at a very odd hour in Chicago. Oh, that was a number of months ago. That goes back at least 6 months.
Yes. Yes. And you do the amount of modern exchange of argument on various aspects in the world, which is coming out of Iran, and credit to it, Russia today is quite extraordinary. And in fact, it's the most fertile, intellectually fertile areas are coming out, and particularly in respect of Iran. And they're willing to talk to anybody. As anybody just shows a bit of straightforward and doesn't start from the proposition that Iran is wrong, you start from the proposition that it might be right, then after that, they will always cooperate and go forward and help you. Steve, on the move to, let's move now to the multipolar world. I'm sure you've noted all the new agreements we're going. When I talk to people today, you see, someone the other yesterday said that I owed them money. And then the next line was, please pay me in rupees. That was what they said. Mm. Whereupon I said, or gold. Now, this little joke, which is going the rounds, is indicative of something big. When ordinary people are making jokes, wanting to be paid in dinars or rupees or anything except UK pounds, whatever the realities of currency exchange at this moment, that the joke is going out there that the dollar's demise is in the way, is on the way out, and that if you deal with other countries, why should you not be paid in their currency or in gold? And so that little joke is starting the rounds now. I want you to wait to spot it and see whether it comes up in your acquaintances when they demand money from you, not in US dollars, and they say, anything else, Steve, except dollars. That is the one coming. So I noted that one the other day.
Can I add one thing to that, Ruddy? I think that's very, very important. And to me, the best way to beat America is not trying to do it on the battlefield. You're not going to do it matching America's
not
military
on the
might. But the way to do it is to attack its soft underbelly. And the dollar, I think, may be the softest part of its underbelly. And the idea that many nations, important nations, Russia, China, Iran, I think Brazil, India, I think to some extent they're increasingly trading in their own currencies or in gold, and the more of this that happens, the more you bypass the dollar, the weaker the dollar becomes, because America's strength depends on other countries buying the dollar, supporting it. So America can use limitless numbers of dollars for speculation, for militarism, for all of the horrors that America commits on a global basis. And if you start sapping that strength, then the whole game comes to an end. It's not going to happen quickly. It could take many, many, many years, but it's starting to happen. Russia and China especially, maybe the two most important countries, they are increasingly planning to trade in their own currencies, rubles and renminbi, and I see this coming, and they simply want out from under this damn currency, and they're furious at the way Washington targets them irresponsibly. They know the dirty game. They know what's going on, and this is the way they can fight back, and there's not a damn thing Washington can do about it.
And there's been some very interesting information coming out as to this question of the dollar. Well, the latest one is that what seems to have happened is that the USA created out of nothing and gave billions of money to Belgium to enable the Belgians to buy up American treasury bonds. What you're getting is a sort of a complete and falsification of the situation. Belgium, whose GDP is about 500 billion, purchased, this is in last November, 140 billion of US Treasury bonds. Now, how did Belgium come up with enough money during a 3-month period to allocate 29% of its GDP to the purchase of US Treasury bonds? So the game would be that did Belgium's central bank print 140 billion worth of euros? Well, of course it didn't, because Belgium is not allowed to print central bank. That's the right. point about Europe. You haven't got your own national bank. So where did the $140 billion come from? And there's only one possible source. It has to be, it's the U.S. Federal Reserve. And you're into money laundering, okay? And the money would have then gone to Europe, and to hide the fact that the federal bond purchases were much less than that, but the extra money is sort of being handed by the Federal Reserve across to Belgium to do the work. Why did the USA Federal Reserve? Well, it just has to be that people are no longer really genuinely wanting to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. So you see, the money printing is affecting the situation, the worth of the government bonds. And then at the same time, you print even more money and disguise it and get somebody else to buy the bonds. This is preposterous stuff. But this inexplicable rise in Belgium's holdings is to do with ultimately the failure of American policy. And of course, the jobs are not coming back in America. They're still going away. Your rich poor divisions are increasing. The middle class are being smashed out. Even Switzerland now is proposing a basic wage, which is something like double what would be the basic wage in the USA. And ultimately the USA situation is an economic failure. And it's now the dollar is fake, and it's the purchase of bonds are fake. And it's using a small country like Belgium to manipulate the situation. It's money laundering, Steve.
It is money laundering, and it seems crazy to be buying these bonds. I mean, they're grossly overvalued. I haven't checked the latest yield, but it dropped maybe to an all-time low in modern times, something like 2.5%. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. With such great risk in the U.S. economy, and people are putting their money into long-term well, these are 10-year Treasury bonds. I think the 30-year may pay around 3.5%, but that's crazy too. I don't know what
it's crazy.
Go ahead, Randy.
It's crazy because you look at the effective, not the lies that they tell. You look at the effective inflation rate. Then you're putting your money into bonds, which in fact are losing money on any argument. So I'm afraid, but of course the US government couldn't afford to pay more than 2.5% on its bonds. If it did, it would be bankrupt immediately. But the USA fears more than anything else, Steve, it fears a rise in interest rates. And so it's trying now to sort of all the time pretend and keep the interest rates down and show that its bonds are valid and everybody wants them. But it's manipulating the thing, and the situation is quietly getting worse. And at the same time, the middle classes in the USA. How is it, Steve, that when you've got the technology, which is what produces the wealth today, the technology produces the wealth, and that explains the great increases in wealth in countries more than any other factor. How is it that the technology is increasing, and there's nobody doubts that, at the same time, America's ability to have a genuine standard of living is collapsing and is about to go down the plug hole. Well, answer, it's this corrupt system which is focused ultimately on a rich-poor division and sucking wealth up, and not with the productive economy. It's ultimately to do with a military-industrial complex, which thinks as long as it dominates the world militarily, like any empire, does, like the British Empire and the Portuguese and the French, that they rip off the sources from abroad. But that one is ending, Steve, because people are long now saying, well, they don't want to be ripped off. They know that the presence of the Americans and the British is a ripping off. That's not to say that the Chinese and even the Russians won't rip them off, but they're certainly turning, becoming more independently minded, and that is a good thing. But there you are. You're looking at a monstrous fraud done with the connivance and the cooperation of the Belgians. And the next one, of course, next month, it'll be done with the connivance and cooperation of the French. So, Steve, that's what's going to happen.
Oh, indeed, right. Washington, the Federal Reserve, Washington. Well, the Federal Reserve, of course, is private, owned by Wall Street. But the Fed are working with the crooks in Washington. I mean, they can shift from one small to bigger country. They can use Belgium this time. They can go to Luxembourg. Luxembourg, I think you could fit into one suburb of Chicago. They could go to any country in Europe. They could go outside of Europe and launder these hundreds of billions of dollars to suck up U.S. treasuries that nobody should come within a country mile of.
That's right. Of course, one would say, what does it matter? The answer is it doesn't matter, until suddenly it does, and the whole damn thing explodes. Because that is what always happens with money printing.
Oh,
it doesn't seem to work, so they put out more. It doesn't seem to work, they put out more, and then suddenly you're not in inflation, you're into hyperinflation, and the whole thing goes. So there you are. Steve, the Israelis are up to their usual tricks. And America, of course, completely cowardly, Kerry saying, oh, both sides are to blame for the failure of the talks. Oh, really? And during the talks, the Israelis were actually announcing even faster, more and more settlements. And yet Kerry dares to say that both sides are to blame for the talks. When is an American politician going to have the guts to say that Israel has got no intention of allowing or negotiating anything, because it's an expanding entity which intends steamrolling its way over time, not always, into more and more lands. See, just quickly going round the world, Turkey, what a mistake by Erdogan, who must have had $1 million or even $1 billion put into his bank account, whereupon he was encouraged to go into Syria. Mm-hmm. That has now boomeranged back, and he's now in big trouble because this been disastrous mine explosion in Turkey. They're on about 300 deaths already, and Turkey is going into a crisis because it's political and it's economic. And it's Erdogan's policy is going to possibly even destroy Turkey, because now all the Takfiri forces will be in there as well.
He got in bed with the devil being Washington, waging war on Syria, and of course Turkey borders on Syria. I mean, he's up to his ears in trouble, and if any guy deserves to really get whacked down hard and destroyed, it's this monster who calls himself a prime minister. Well, let the Turkish people take care of him. I'm very comfortable letting them do it, and I agree that mining disaster, a few hundred people killed, when warning after warning after warning about unconscionable mine safety issues, and he didn't give a damn how many people died. I mean, it's astonishing that in a country with some modernity to it, let this kind of thing happen. And there won't be a thing done to correct the problems after this thing happened. There'll be another one at some point.
Steve, the interesting thing about it, as I understand it, is that they privatized the mines and then abnegated the responsibility of government to have anything to do with safety.
I think so.
It was sheer doctrinaire. Oh, you know, safety is something which to do with the profit of a country. But in fact, in this real world, you must have regulation of things like safety, and you just say, it is done, and it is a cost imposed upon production. You do it the other way around and say, oh, all costs of production not all of them are legitimate, and you can avoid safety, then what happens is there is no safety. And this goes on till you get a situation like this, which was being complained about for, oh, I believe years and years. Only it was a what you call an accident waiting to happen. So I'm afraid Turkey is looking at bad news. Steve, Egypt, talk about a failure of policy. I mean, it was so bad with Morsi, but that now you've got Mubarak coming back into power, and because nobody has the faintest idea of improving the situation, you've got Mubarak back in power. His name is General Sisi, but Egypt now, I'm afraid, has gone completely backwards. It's very shocking, but you and I can't do much about that. I don't know what to say about Egypt. I'm very disappointed. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. I write occasionally about Egypt, not too often. The last time probably was maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and I wrote one article earlier calling al-Sisi, trained in U.S. Military establishments, whatever you call them, war colleges. Al-Sisi is Egypt's Pinochet, really following the same model, murdering his own people, except he's doing it in large tranches, sentencing hundreds of people at the same time to death. Hundreds of people, 500, 600.
Five or 600 at one go is sentenced to death.
At one go. Who ever heard of anything like this? I don't think Adolf Hitler ever did anything like that. But this guy is doing it, and Washington winks and nods and doesn't do a damn thing, sends him $1 billion in help. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous. This guy is a monster. The election coming up, I think on the 25th of May, same day as the Ukrainian election. My goodness. Two sham elections on the same date, and of course Washington will call them what they call all these elections, democratic. Yeah, democratic like my foot.
Well, you know, Washington, they cannot no longer get away with it, Steve. We know it's the America is now pinned, I think, increasingly being pinned, being anti-democratic. If you take the UK, we are in September, we are going to have a referendum, right? And it's on Scotland. And I'm not sure what the exact question's going to be and what the quite implication will be of 51% rejecting or 51% going no. But, you know, there we are going for a referendum on a big issue because a lot of people want it. Contrast that with that vicious twerp, William Hague, who is our Prime Minister, condemning those in Ukraine or condemning where they even got rid of their elected government. We talk about democracy, but all the time we end up overthrowing democracy or supporting autocracy. Of course, I'm not saying that in fact, in Egypt, that there is an easy solution. There is not an easy solution. Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood really did muck things up in a big way. But they're going to go back to just the vicious police state being spied on everywhere, using all the methods of internet spying, etc., to get hold of people and torture them. And they were just, and behind this, of course, is you've got 30 to 35% of the Egyptian economy is actually owned and controlled by military figures. Mm-hmm. So they're going back to a military police state, which they were under Mubarak.
Indeed, and Mubarak was a general, and al-Sisi is a general. The generals have been ruling Egypt for a long, long time, and the people have been terribly abused and exploited. And it's probably going to be worse than ever. I think it is worse than ever right now under al-Sisi. And there'll be another uprising, and there'll be many more people murdered. It's a horrible situation.
Yes, indeed. Steve, what do you think about the chances in the USA of there being a genuinely new political force coming when you go for your next president? I mean, you look at your record in the past and the third party never makes it. Do you think that come 2016 will it be?
Oh, I don't see it in 2016, Rodney. Not unless there is mass public reaction. The only way to change the U.S. system, the idea of scattered reforms, it's way, way too late for that. The only way a new system could come into effect is if there is mass grassroots opposition to the duopoly running America, to the money power running America, Republicans and Democrats, two sides of the same coin. And if something happens, to get an independent candidate with mass public support. That's the only way they can change things. It's possible. The last independent candidate who did anything was in 1992, Ross Perot, a guy who I once met, a billionaire. He got 20% of the votes. He knocked out George Bush Sr. And before that, I forget the guy's name, an independent candidate. He didn't do as well as Perot. He got maybe 15%. But since 1992, an independent candidate has gone nowhere.
I never really understood what Ross Perot really stood for. It looks to me that he was spinning some sort of right-wing fascist. Is that a fair description of it?
He just wanted to make more money. I never had much respect for Ross Perot, other than the fact that he was running against the Republicans and the Democrats. And in that respect, I thought that was very lovely. I met him in a Dallas hotel once. I knew who he was. He knew who I was because he knew what I was involved in my family business. And we stopped, we shook hands, said hello very briefly. Oh, this was probably 30 years ago. And he went his way and I went my way. but I actually bumped into the guy once.
Yes, I think that there could well be a libertarian candidate in the USA, relying on slogans like whatever they mean, freedom and liberty, which of course only means freedom and liberty for a relatively small group of the population.
Oh, indeed. And they never get more than 1% of the vote, Rodney. That's the problem.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you've got Merlin Miller, who is also going to be an independent candidate, and I suppose the chances are high that somebody like Jess Ventura, who was Minnesota.
Minnesota. Oh, I'd vote for Jesse any day.
Yes. I mean, he as a person, he has tremendous integrity, and he would, and so has Ron Paul. I'm not so sure about it, Rand Paul. Ron Paul, they've got tremendous integrity. Whether they got the solutions, though, the economic solutions for the USA, that's where, in fact, I think the great question mark is.
Oh, yeah. We've got about a minute and a half or so left. I wouldn't let you finish it up. But I would just say the only way to defeat this monster is by mass public opinion simply not being willing to put up with this stuff anymore. If that grows to a crescendo, it can be powerful enough to really bring about real change, the kind of change we got with civil rights and labor rights. I mean, we need much bigger change than that. We need to crush the war machine and replace it with a peace machine.
Okay.
About 2 minutes we've got. Let me give it to you,
okay,
Rodney, and you wrap up with some final thoughts.
Always strike when the iron's hot, and when the tide starts to turn, start to go with it. And I want to say to all American listeners that now is the time to push on the relationship between the USA and Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia, what's the phrase, has blinked and has turned. Perhaps it was the shock of Bahrain, which is supported and backed by Saudi Arabia, to crush its population. Perhaps it is the shock that you're seeing that the autocratic regimes in the Persian Gulf are no longer secure, and now is the time to turn on them and to condemn your own government for supporting their regimes. Because, you see, the tide is moving, and the thing is starting to crack. And when you get the Saudis trying to cozy up to Iran, I mean, the Iranians are saying, oh, yes, yes, we'll talk, etc. They must be absolutely flabbergasted. But, you see, it's the cracking open of the old structure in the Persian Gulf. It's actually a cracking of American power. There are great question marks, even over the relationship now between the USA and Israel. My sniff in the air is that change is afoot, and it's leading to a different world, which I welcome.
Oh, indeed, Rodney. We are out of time. Disappointing. I always hate to end the program. I look forward to getting you back. Oh, a tremendous hour. Lots covered. Many issues. I love that. Rodney, my great thanks. I'll shoot you an email off here, and I look forward to having you back next month.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks, Rodney. We'll be taping tomorrow, and we'll be on live Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.